and now we are meeting you, expecting, of course, the presentation that you will be doing to us as the members of the committee. I will allow the members of the committee to introduce themselves, since this is the first meeting. I hope that you will all meet them well. We also acknowledge the presence of the Minister and the Deputy Minister amongst us in this meeting. I will start with you, Honourable.
Good afternoon, everybody. I am Samantha Graham. I represent the Eastern Cape, and I'm from the Democratic Alliance.
Good morning, Dumela. My name is Patricia Kopane. I am a member of this portfolio committee. I'm from the most beautiful province, that is the Free State. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Madeleine Hicklin. I'm from Johannesburg, and I'm also from the Democratic Alliance.
Good afternoon. My name is Wayne Thring. I am from the warmest province in the country at the moment, KwaZulu-Natal. And I represent the African Christian Democratic Party.
Greetings, I am Tim Mashele. I'm a villager from Mpumalanga. I'm representing the African National Congress.
Greetings, I am Lizzie Shabalala from KwaZulu-Natal. I represent the African National Congress. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Lindwe Mjobo. I'm deployed by African National Congress. I'm from KwaZulu-Natal.
Thank you, honorable members. Colleagues, Minister and Deputy Minister, and officials from Department of Public Works and Infrastructure, my name is Nolita Ntebongwana. The newly elected chairperson of this portfolio committee from today up to the end of the sixth administration. As you all know that we get our existence from the constitution of this country, which says that there must be mechanism that ensures that the parliament is held accountable. The parliament holds accountable the executive. So that is why we are here. Since we have just been sworn in, we ask our secretariat to please ask you to come to this meeting so that you brief us about all that is happening in the department and all the entities. I think that has been seen by those responsible in the department. We will then allow you, I think starting from the minister, that you introduce yourself to us, because we don't know you. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. Thank you for the opportunity this afternoon. I agree with the role of the Portfolio Committee, and that is to hold the executive to account. And certainly from my side, we will do everything possible to assist you in that task. It's a difficult time. We came in to finish off the work of the fifth administration. So what we will be presenting to you today, it is the last financial year for the fifth term. We will have opportunities going forward for the next 5 years to develop our own strategic framework and the way forward, taking in consideration the new seven priorities set by the President and, of course, the State of the Nation address. So what I've attempted to do with the foreword was just to indicate that transition between the fifth and the sixth parliament, and taking in consideration some of the alignment to the new seven priorities. So we will beg for your indulgence as we go to this journey together. It's a massive portfolio, but key to me, of course, is that the spaces where our public interact with government on a daily basis, like the clinics, the schools, the receiver of revenue, the police stations, that those public spaces of which we are the custodians must be made friendly and welcoming. Because if people have a bad experience when they get into those public spaces, they hold government to account, they blame government for that bad experience. So the public spaces, both buildings and land, of which we are the custodians, we need to begin to make sure that the experience of the ordinary person getting into any of the public spaces is one where they can be proud of their government and not have all of the complaints of lack of renovations and you know, places filthy and all of that. So that will be running through our presentation in the APP, how we can make these public spaces, both buildings and land, first more accessible to the public, and that the public must enjoy the experience. And then lastly, Chairperson, also that public land and public buildings must be used for the public good. And certainly as we build on this department, on where the previous Minister Tula Nessies left off, we will continue to improve those conditions. So with those few words, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members of the committee. The DG and his team of officials, my big sister next to me, with whom we have been tasked to hold hands and in charting the way forward for the department. I think she has, Honourable Minister has already reported on what as a team we would want to see happen. But let I remind all of us that we all, especially the politicians in the room, are from a gruesome political engagement with the public. And we've listened and we've heard people speak, talking to us. We have a duty, therefore, to respond in a manner that is consistent with their expectations in terms of how we do our work. When I was given an opportunity to speak to the team, Public Works, we reminded each other that actually the Department of Public Works is a department of all departments. It's a department of economic development, it's a department of social development. And therefore we need to do what is expected of us in a manner that is consistent and is responsive to the expectations of our electorate. And therefore we will hold hands and try our level best to do just that. Therefore, Makolo Kivik is my name. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, Minister, Deputy Minister, colleagues. My name is Sam Vukela. I'm the DG of the department. My colleagues will introduce themselves.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Imtiaz Faisal. I'm the DDG for Governance, Risk and Compliance in the department.
I think, honourable members, it would also save us time if we ask DG to introduce his team and the sections or entities within the team, so that we don't ask all of them to introduce themselves. With your indulgence, members. Thank you.
I thought that you want to hear their voices. We have got colleagues in the department, and then also those who are from our entities that are here to also support. He has already introduced himself. He's new. I have not met him. He will be introduced to me afterwards. So I thought he should introduce himself.
Good afternoon. Observed. My name is Thembele Sifanele. I'm within the GRC under the unit strategic management.
Thank you very much. Next to him is Mr. Maroha. He's acting head of the PMTE. The department has got two votes. It's a main vote and the PMTE. He's acting head of the PMTE. Mr. Maroha is supporting the PMTE with respect to the financial sustainability of the PMTE. Mr. Mokoro, I'm sorry. Next to him is the CFO, Mr. Manda Sitole. And then next to him is Mr. Mazibuko. He's in the finance department. Next to him is Yeleti Makubele. She's in facilities management, heading the branch. Next to her is Mulatelo Mwasa. He's heading the IGR function, intergovernmental relations. Next to him is Vatu Mukutu. He's heading the construction sector, construction division in the department. There is Mr. Tawahale there, who's heading the small harbors, but is also the administrator. As you may be aware, Honorable Chair, that Northwest is still under administration. So it's representing the Department of Public Works there, reporting also to us. Next to him is Ayn. He's in the PMTE, supporting in terms of the technical skills. Yulela Kruger, she's heading our supply chain management. She's acting chief director there. CJ, she's the acting DDG, EPWP. The DDG is off sick, I think it's attending some family matters. It's Madam Pell, she's in the EPWP also. Sasa Suban, she's heading the RAID, Real Estate Investment Division, which does the planning of all the infrastructure and so on, and also precinct development. I forgot your name. Eric. Eric is in the REMS. REMS is more the ones who are doing the leases for the department. Madam Swansea, she's heading the actual reason why the department exists, the asset register. She's heading that unit. Randani, she's heading the internal audit. She's the head of internal audit in the department. The CEO of IDT, Mr. Pakade. From there is the chief director communication, Mr. Ngobo. Maslayelo is in the office of the DG. Oh, Siabonga Daz is the one who's strategizing in the department. And then our colleague here, Patu Abuda, she's in the IGR but doing the entire organizational secretariat for the department. Did I leave anyone, colleague? There are colleagues that side who are sitting there. They are in the Mr. Dion there is in the Deputy Minister's office. And then our colleague in the middle, Sipo, is the head of the office of the Deputy Minister. and Mashawa has transitioned from the former minister's office, is now in the IGR, in the department. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Dilip. Definitely, Minister Ndiyam, you can see Ndoba, you have a male voice. That one has to be transformed. I will allow then Committee Secretary to introduce our support staff.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good afternoon to the Honorable Members, the Minister, the DM, as well as the Department. My name is Nola Jobodwana, the Committee Secretary, Portfolio Committee on Public Works and Infrastructure. On my far right, we have the Content Advisor, Mr. Shuaib Dinesen. On my left, we have Ms. Inez Stephanie, who is our researcher. On my far left, we've got Ms. Nomtu Nevese, who is our committee assistant. I'm trying to find Khadija, but we've got another colleague of ours sitting at the back there, Khadija Osman. She is the executive secretary to the chairperson. Thank you, Chair.
Just before I allow the department to present, Honorable Member Suisa has just joined us. She's from EFF, from Northern Cape. She's also a member of this committee. There are also two members that will join us as we continue. We'll introduce them as they come. We'll then allow the department to do the presentation.
Can we start? Oh, thank you, Honorable Chair. We are going to start with the presentation. We take that. Minister, do you want to say something before we start? Thanks very much. Our presentation will be twofold. We'll have the Department of Main Vote and also the PMTE. Mr. Faisal is going to take us through the department. Mr. Maroa is going to take us the PMTE.
Thank you, DG. Chairperson, members of the committee, the APP, just by way of introduction, is divided into three parts. We have a strategic overview, which articulates the general considerations and the background to the annual performance plan and creates a context in which we develop program performance indicators for monitoring and evaluation in part two, and then in part three, or part C, as it's referred to in the APP, we then link our plan to other related plans, which we'll discuss with members of the committee. First of all, I'd just like to reflect on the fact that our planning process commenced early last year, and we followed a stringent process prescribed by GPME, as well as the National Treasury, and we complied with the various requirements in terms of linking our plans to the National Development Plan, as well as the medium-term strategic framework. There are certain outcomes in the medium-term strategic framework which are relevant to the Department of Public Works as well as the property management trading entity, and we are required to link to those plans in order to demonstrate our compliance with government priorities. The current APP is essentially year 5 of the 5th administration, 2015 to 2020. So on the 1st of April this year, this particular plan commenced implementation and it will end in March next year. So essentially it's year 5 of our strategic plan 2015 to 2020. And just as indicated by the Minister, even though it's a plan that relates to year 5 of the 5th administration, it's a close-out plan for that period. However, we have calibrated or recalibrated these plans to essentially serve as a transition and a platform both for the SONA of the President a few weeks ago in terms of the 7 priorities, and also to gear ourselves for the next 5-year period, because our planning process for the next 5-year period, 2020 to 2025, has already commenced. So this is very much a transition phase where we close out the 5th year of the 5th administration, but also gear ourselves for the next planning process. Chairperson and members of the committee, this is essentially our delivery model. In the department, we have the DPW on the left, and I believe that the slide in front of you, the hard copy, is easier to read. We have the DPW and PMTE. The department took a decision several years ago in terms of a cabinet instruction to establish an operational arm to deliver its property mandate. And as a consequence of that decision, we established a property arm, which is a property management trading entity on the right-hand side. And the property management trading entity essentially is responsible for dealing with the high cost of accommodation as well as a lack of service delivery to our main clients in providing accommodation, and is responsible for the delivery of our property management function as indicated in GIAMA, the Act, the Immovable Asset Management Act. Whereas on the left we have the DPW, the department, the main vote. The main vote focuses on the policy and regulation in the property and construction industries. It also focuses on delivering services to our prestige clients, as we call it currently, as well as delivering on the expanded public works program, which is the flagship program of the department. So here you have on the left the DPW, focusing on policy and EPWP, and on the right we have our property arm, which is a property management trading entity. The PMTE, as we call it, is very much part of the department. It's not a separate public entity, but a part of the department that delivers on the function of property management. Moving from there and that particular background, we have the following program management structure. On the left, we have the programs. These are the National Treasury programs in our budget. And on the right, I have the PMTE programs. And in the center, Chairperson and members of the committee, we have shared services to avoid duplication. Both the main vote, DPW, as well as the PMTE are served by shared services. So finance and supply chain management, corporate services, which entails human resource management, legal services, as well as information technology management, are provided by the shared service function to both the main vote, as well as the PMTE, as well as governance, risk and compliance, intergovernmental relations, and of course our policy function also serves to a large extent DPW, but also the PMTE. So we have an administration function in DPW, the intergovernmental coordination, we have the extended public works program. The fourth program is our policy program called Property and Construction Industry Policy and Research. And finally, our prestige policy. So the prestige function is the fifth program in DPW. The six programs in PMT on the right-hand side are administration, real estate investment services, construction management, real estate management services, the registry services, and facilities management. That very much reflects the main property management functions. So this is our program budget structure. In terms of our arrangements with National Treasury. Chairperson, on slide number 5, we have a high-level slide there which talks to the vision of the department, that the dominant function of the department as a whole is essentially the provision of accommodation to national government departments as well as other organs of state. And our vision is to provide convenient access to dignified public services. That's essentially what we do. And we have a number of goals in support of that particular vision, that we are there to transform the construction and property sectors. We are there to oversee the public works sector, which includes the National Department of Public Works as well as the 9 provincial departments of public works. Thirdly, we have an oversight role in terms of government's public employment program, the expanded public works program. We are there to oversee the efficient delivery of services to our prestige clients, which include the judiciary, parliament, as well as the executive. And then, of course, we are there to build state capacity in the built environment profession and provide support services to the department as a whole in an efficient manner. Chairperson and members of the committee, all of this is linked. These functions, they are linked to the National Development Plan, the New Growth Path, and in particular, the medium-term strategic framework. And in this particular context, medium-term strategic framework outcome 4, decent employment through inclusive economic growth, is one focus of the department. The second focus is MTSF outcome 5, which is skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path. And finally, medium-term strategic framework outcome 13, which is an inclusive and responsive social protection system. And that particular area is covered by our extended public works function. There's also outcome 12, which is to create a capable public service, and we focus in that area through our property management trading entity, which my colleague will present after me. Chairperson, with that background, I move to part A, which is our situational analysis, and I can indicate that there have been no changes to the medium-term strategic framework, that we're still focusing on outcome 4, and we are focusing as well on the MTSF outcome 5 and outcome 13, so there have been no changes, as I've indicated. Moving on from there onto slide 8, linkages to other government plans. We have linked our plan to the previous SONA addressed in February of this year, and the one area of SONA was to drive employment, reduce poverty and inequality through the EPWP program. In this regard, we've identified new opportunities to expand jobs created in EPWP. We've improved the governance of EPWP, and we're intending further development in the new year, as well as defining the roles and responsibilities of those who implement and those who oversee the Expanded Public Works Program. With respect to improving workplace performance and access to job opportunities, through in-service training and implementation of skills development programs, we have a number of structured capacity building programs in place. C, with respect to transformation of the property and construction sectors, we are undertaking a policy review in the year ahead to facilitate socio-economic transformation within the built environment, and we are also supporting the Construction Sector Council to ensure that parameters for transformation in the industry are set and measured on an ongoing basis. And then moving to slide 9, the reindustrialization and stimulation of manufacturing. Our SCM policy and internal directives are directed towards mandatory subcontracting to people within designated groups, and we are also using the consolidated procurement plan in the department to leverage procurement plan spend to advance designated groups. With respect to the black industrialists, we are planning in the year ahead full implementation of the preferential procurement regulations 2017 to effect targeted procurement. With respect to investment in SME incubation and small businesses, we are specifically setting aside 30% of all our procurement spend in favor of designated groups. And then with respect to our entities and professional councils as agents for advancing economic and social transformation, we'll be giving greater attention to improving the governance of our entities to make sure that they are aligned to departmental priorities and don't operate just for the sake of operating on their own. And we are beginning to conduct greater monitoring and evaluation functions over them. Moving on to slide 10, Chairperson and members of the committee, we talk about the external environment and the environment that influences our service delivery in the department. On a macroeconomic level, we identified the low growth and the unchanged government revenue projections and how these have become a constraint on our budget. And then given the various spending pressures, we appreciate the tight fiscal environment and that government is likely to again exceed the expenditure ceiling, and these dynamics expected to continue to increase government debt and place further restraints on departments. In fact, we're now working on a framework where we're reducing our budget year on year by 5%, and that's currently challenging us and our minds in the department. With respect to the labor market and the context of our Extended Public Works Program, we note that although employment has increased, the unemployment rate at 27% is below the rate of 27.5% for the fourth quarter in the previous year. So it would appear that the level of unemployment is decreasing. However, there would appear to be an increase in employment, but not enough to cater for the overall increase in the economically active group in our population. And also this increase can lead to an understatement in the unemployment rate, because you have a number of discouraged job seekers that are not being economically active and are not being measured. So the overall scenario is a negative one in terms of the unemployment rate. With respect to the construction sector, and this is relevant for our construction function, is that gross fixed capital formation has been about 20% of GDP consistently over the last 5 years, which is low compared to the rates projected in the National Development Plan to bring about economic growth. So we are facing, from the external point of view, a depressed economic environment, the macro environment. Looking at the external factors influencing service delivery in the department, and I'm just referring members to Section 7.2 in the plan, raising employment levels by providing a strong supporting environment for growth and development while promoting a more labor-absorptive economy. The lack of strong growth has severely limited the capacity of our economy to create jobs. And in this particular context, EPWP is required to contribute to both short-term social protection as well as longer-term economic development. And this program is therefore a form of non-contributory social assistance focusing on providing employment to the under or unemployed poor, as well as providing income transfers to alleviate poverty and to limit its spread. And we also, within infrastructure, is also developed along the way and is there to service the poorer community. So there is a particular context in which the Extended Public Works Program supports and deals with unemployment and social protection. With respect to transformation within the property and construction sector, the department is driving its transformation agenda through a number of interventions. We use advocacy and awareness programs. We also monitor the implementation of empowerment programs out there, as well as initiating training and capacity programs for designated groups. With respect to skills development in the built environment, a key strategy in addressing the skills shortage is to restore the skills pipeline through A, managing the implementation of the built environment skills pipeline strategy throughout the sector, and also minimizing over-reliance on construction and consultants and decreasing the expenditure in this particular regard. So that is our approach towards developing skills, and we have a number of key performance indicators which will talk to building a built environment skills pipeline. Promoting good governance within the public works sector, we appreciate that accountability must be improved, and we also recognize that there's already a good system within the public works sector as a concurrent function. There's a lot of cooperation between the national department and the 9 provincial departments, and we're looking at strengthening this going forward. Chairperson and members of the committee, with respect to the value for money issues, that given the insufficient economic growth and the socio-economic transformation, there's tight alignment of the NDP and the budget is required. We are seized with looking at what our priorities are and make sure that our priorities are adequately funded. And funds must only be reallocated from non-core and non-performing programs to performing areas and priorities, and that funding must be used only in urgent interventions. For the next 5-year cycle, we'll be seized with similar considerations in that we are facing budget cuts and we need to map our strategy so that we ensure that we have value for money in terms of our limited spending capability going forward. Moving on to the internal environment, Chairperson and members of the committee, there are a number of business improvement initiatives which we've set up for the year ahead. First of all, the Young Professional Program. The department has granted funding to expand this program, in fact. We're fortunate for that. And then we also have the SAPOA, the Property Owners Association program aimed at professionalizing the PMTE. And we also have a project to establish a public works academy to rebuild the technical and professional capacity of the state. With respect to fraud and corruption, there have been allegations of fraud and corruption in the department, and we deal with this very stringently. And the focus now is on preventing incidents of fraud and corruption to proactive management of vulnerable areas. And such investigations are now focusing on finding the internal control weaknesses so we prevent the occurrence of fraudulent and corrupt activity in our environment. With respect to service delivery improvement, Chairperson and members of the committee, we have a service delivery improvement program, and this focuses very much on citizen issues and service delivery and frontline service delivery, where we introduce the Batupila principles. But the next critical step is how are we going to realign our service delivery model, especially for our next 5 years, to cut our clock accordingly given the budget constraints and reduction in the allocation from National Treasury over the medium term. Also on the internal environment, there are a number of internal policies and processes and systems which we are introducing. We'll introduce a national framework for technical capacity building for the state, which will aim to coordinate and monitor capacity building in the built environment. We also have the skills pipeline program for the built environment that is unique but an integrated platform. And we're developing a system to support the department in this regard. We also have an intervention called the Integrity Management Framework, which is a response to the department's position on zero tolerance towards fraud and corruption and a commitment to service delivery. The purpose of this framework is to drive ethics as a key consideration in our turnaround and our focus. And we're also aligning this to the 7th priority in the new SONA that talks about creating a capable state in an ethical environment. Following the approval of the new public service regulations, we are also developing new HR policies in the department. We are also exploring an ERP system to work in the broader public work sector with a view to creating a single view of our asset register. And we are introducing as well business intelligence tools to drive management and decision making. With respect to internal policies and processes, On slide 15, I continue by making reference to a disaster recovery plan which was pointed out by the Auditor General and a recurring finding we are now implementing, and we are also undertaking an SCM review to ensure that we revise our business processes to create a more efficient turnaround time within SCM. And within the EPWP, we are developing a program called the EPWP policy. Given the absence of legislation in EPWP, we're developing an EPWP policy to serve as a precursor for the development of possible legislation in this area going forward. And then with respect to the EPWP reporting system, we are going to enhance the reporting system and also create some kind of synergy for the Department of Home Affairs to ensure that people who receive training on EPWP and opportunities on EPWP have proper identification documentation from the Department of Home Affairs. With respect to the policy arena, in the year ahead we will be redrafting our CBE bills, the bills for the six built environment professional councils, as well as the CIDD legislation, and undertaking further research in this area, as well as developing a business case for the IDT to ensure its future sustainability. Chairperson, as part of the five-year plan, our policy review is also directed at our 1997 and 1999 white papers. We have those two white papers in place, and the purpose of the review, first of all, is to clarify and refresh our mandate and determine new legislation and whether or not it is required, and to strengthen the regulatory and development role of the public works department and sector, as well as to identify and close policy gaps and to realign policy objectives and ensure policy coherence. So that going forward, that is going to be a major flagship program for us that commences with its focus in the current year. With respect to the performance environment, Chairperson, we've identified the following 15 key areas where we focus on bringing about change to enhance performance. First of all, with respect to the EPWP, we've identified poor and underreporting of work opportunities by public bodies. We've also identified poor record keeping by public bodies in this regard, as well as non-implementation of projects per their business plans. We've also, in the year ahead, will focus on implementation of standard operating procedures to improve audit outcomes in this regard, EPWP, as well as increasing work opportunity targets, that we are not maximizing the opportunity for work creation, the EPWP program. We'll be also enhancing the skills development program, improving intergovernmental coordination, and accelerating the finalization of the legislation within the department. This is the possible Public Works Act. We'll also be focusing on improving service delivery to our prestige clients, as I mentioned, the executive, the legislature, and the judiciary in the main, as well as reducing fraud and corruption. It's a big program for us. And then there's a program called the Management Performance Assessment Tool, item number 11. This is an area managed by the presidency where they look at strategic management, human resource management, and financial management in particular, and they assess the quality of systems and processes in departments to address those three areas. And the department has moved from a rating of 25% about 4 years ago to between 70 and 80% last year. So we are hoping to increase that in the year ahead and see there's an opportunity to introduce greater governance practices, but also improve our reputation out there. We also want to improve turnaround in supply chain management, given the fact the department engages in a huge amount of procurement as part of its service delivery. We want to reduce incidents of irregular expenditure. 5 years ago, Chairperson and members of the committee, we undertook a program that went back almost 10 years to identify past incurrence of irregular expenditure and to deal with that. We've mainly dealt with it, and in the current year, as well as last year, we incur practically no irregular expenditure because of the systems we've put in place. And then, of course, we want to reduce the extent of litigation within the department. In the past, we had a huge amount of litigation which resulted in a significant losses to the state, and we want to prevent that. Chairperson, members of the committee, are moving on to the area called demand for services before I go to the performance indicators. And we have our demand for services in three main areas as the main Department of Public Works. It's the Department for Built Environment Skills, that we have this particular chronic shortage of built environment professionals available to the state, and we need to deal with this. We also have a demand for work opportunities that, given the context of the extended public works program, as well as the extent of unemployment, and as we know that despite the efforts of government, unemployment remains stubbornly high, and our EPWP program is the intervention to provide work opportunities and to also alleviate unemployment. And we have demand for prestige services. This is the other function performed by the department, where we provide accommodation, office accommodation, as well as movable furniture to our prestige clients. With respect to the organizational environment, chairperson and members of the committee, some of the key issues relating to the organizational structure is that we have a huge amount of vacancies in our structure, and we need to fill these within the compensation ceiling available to us. And this is going to be a focus area in the year ahead. We also must factor within the organizational environment all the issues that I've raised with you. And what has transpired is, with the background we've given you, chairperson and members of the committee, we've then identified the focus areas that must form the core of our plan. And those focus areas must also then determine what our business model must look like. And what we're doing is we see our role and the interventions required in our plan is to provide leadership to the wider construction and property sectors. Secondly, to provide oversight of the public works sector, and I'm referring to the 9 provincial departments of public works in the main. And then we also must work with our entities, which is the CIDB Construction Industry Development Board, the Council for the Built Environment, AgriMore South Africa, as well as the Independent Development Trust. We need to work closely with them, with the Built Environment Professional Councils, to regulate and transform the built environment. And then we need to work with the CBE, which is the Council for the Built Environment, to open up the skills pipeline and to ensure that we have the skills necessary within the built environment and available to the state. And then, of course, we need to coordinate and provide implementation support, monitoring and evaluation, as well as reporting on the expanded public works program. Those are the key areas that we will focus on in the year ahead. And, of course, there's a shared service model which we're utilizing to support both the department and PMTE. With that background, chairperson and members of the committee are now moving to the budget and the performance indicators. And our budget for the year ahead for the Department of Public Works purely is 7.8 billion rand. Chair and members of the committee, this used to be a lot bigger than 7.8 billion. We used to have a program called Program 2 that used to be our property program. We have now hived that out into a separate huge budget, which is essentially 80% of our budget, which my colleague will present next. So the main vote purely is a 7.8 billion budget. And then on the slide that follows, this is the same budget for the economic classification basis, and one can see that transfers and subsidies, provinces and municipalities, as well as departmental agencies and accounts, take up the bulk of the budget, the first being 1.5 billion, and the one to departmental agencies, which is mainly the PMTE, our property branch, is just under 4.2 billion rand. So our main items is actually incurred outside the department. I must just remind the members of the committee that the provinces and municipalities are mainly transferred by the expanded public works program as incentive grants to provinces and municipalities, which I'll deal with later. So with that background and the budget, I'm moving on to the performance indicators, and I'm going to program one, the administration program. The first performance indicator is the number of initiatives undertaken to accelerate transformation agenda of government. These initiatives are by our gender unit in the DG's office. They will undertake 36 initiatives, which include advocacy initiatives and stakeholder engagements, as well as capacity building to enhance their agenda. These are initiatives to accelerate transformation and women empowerment. Second one is the Management Performance Assessment 2, which I discussed earlier. Chair, members of the committee, you can see in 2015 we started at 2.7 to 2.9, 2.9, and then 3.6 to 4 is the area we are targeting in the year ahead. So we are hoping to perform better and to demonstrate the increase in our performance within the area of strategic management as well as other areas of governance. Indicator number 3, we are undertaking to conduct 100% of our investigations within 30 days, to initiate them within 30 days. Number 4 is we are going to introduce 2 major investment or interventions per annum to reduce fraud risk. And in the current year, we're focusing on prestige as well as the leasing in environment, where we're spending 7.5 to 8 billion a year leasing in. We are dealing with preventing fraud and corruption in that area. Item number 5 is a change in irregular expenditure baseline, where we're eliminating irregular expenditure, and our target is 100% in the year ahead. As you can see, chairperson, we've mainly eliminated the historical irregular expenditure, and our targets going forward is to ensure we don't incur irregular expenditure any longer. Item number 6 is payment of all invoices within 30 days, and we want to achieve 100% compliance, and we've introduced a system called the Riyad Batala system to support this process. Number 7 and number 8 are SCM targets. Number 7 is related to tenders. We want to award tenders, 75% of tenders within 56 working days, and 90% of quotations within 30 working days. Those are our targets within the SCM environment. Item number 9 is that our empowerment strategy is underpinned by item number 9 and 10. In terms of procurement spend in target 9 and procurement percentage of bids, we are targeting 80% to designated groups in the year ahead in terms of our empowerment strategy. Indicator number 11, percentage of funded vacancies filled as per the recruitment plan. We want to fill 100% of our vacancies within 6 months of advertisement. And number 12 is an IT-related target. It's property management. This is our ERP system, or the Enterprise Resource Planning IT system we are implementing. We are introducing the investment analysis module in the year ahead, having implemented 5 modules in the prior year. Item number 13, or target number 13, is number of modules enhanced. We are planning to enhance 4 modules to support the PMT, our property business. We are working on the scheduled maintenance module, the condition assessment module, the lease out module, and the construction project management modules. Chairperson, members of the committee, this is a critical area. The IT systems underpin our business. The department operates on an undue level of manual processes, and in this 21st century, it cannot be. So the implementation and rollout of this program is critical to our efficient functioning going forward. Target number 14 is the ERP system for the public work sector. We are also rolling out an ERP system for the public work sector, and that includes the 9 provincial public works. And I want to just remind members of the committee that we don't control those entities. They are independent, autonomous. They belong to the provinces, because public works is a concurrent function. So we work together on the basis of cooperation. And that's the basis upon which we agree with each other and we work together. Target number 15 is a disciplinary action. We are targeting 100% a subjection of disciplinary cases reported to human resources, so they've got to ensure that they subject all cases reported to them pursuant to investigation to a disciplinary process, and then we want to present or prevent 100% of all default judgments against the department. This is a heavy burden on the organization, and it's something our legal services is working heavily to ensure there's no recurrence going forward. Chairperson and members of the committee, the budget is on slide 36. I skipped the quarter targets. I'm moving on to annual targets. Slide number 36, this is the budget for program 1. It's a 500 million rands budget, and it includes our corporate services, our management services, our governance branch, as well as supply chain management. And the slide that follows shows an economic classification of the same budget. And as you can see, the bulk of the expenditure is in compensation of employees, followed by goods and services. Then I'm moving on to the Intergovernmental Coordination Program. The Intergovernmental Coordination Program has 2 branches in it. The first one is the Intergovernmental Coordination Function, or branch, and the second one is a Professional Services Function. Their performance indicators are as follows. Number 1 is the number of performance review reports for the sector program of action presented to MINMAC. So these are performance review reports of the public works sector, and they're targeting 2 such performance reports in the year ahead, and they'll conduct 2 evaluations in this regard. Secondly, is a number of agreements signed for joint service delivery. There's an intergovernmental relations working on cooperation. They are targeting the signature of 15 agreements with other partners and other stakeholders for joint service delivery and joint programs. Target number 3 is the number of reviews conducted on the intergovernmental governance structures, and they'll be conducting a comprehensive review of the quality as well as the efficiency of the working of our intergovernmental structures in the year ahead. Target number 4, and now moving to our professional services, so there's more skills development in terms of their targets. And in the year ahead, the professional services branch will be assisting 1,212 beneficiaries with respect to various skills development programs, and these include the Young Professionals Program, the Internship Program, a Learnership Program, an artisan program as well as a bursary program which the department administers. With respect to the number of provinces with state capacity building programs in the built environment aligned to the skills pipeline program, the department is targeting to support 3 provinces in the year ahead. With respect to the schools program, participants enrolled for a built environment qualification, 40 schools targeted, and number of bursary scheme beneficiaries with completed built environment qualifications, 40 bursary scheme beneficiaries are so targeted in the year ahead. So that is the skills development aspect, and this is a very important initiative. It's the target number 8. Target number 8 represents the department's endeavor to establish a public works academy to restore the skills pipeline in the built environment. And in the year ahead, the department will launch the academy. Chairperson, member of the committee, I'm finished with program number 2. The budget is on slide number 46. It's a 61 million rand budget, and it's taken up mainly by the IGR function. And the economic classification follows, and the bulk of the expenditure as expected is on compensation of employees given the people-driven nature of these particular functions. And then, Chairperson, moving on to the Extended Public Works Program, Program 3, they have a number of targets, 6 in all. The number of work opportunities reported on the reporting system is 992,000. The percentage in terms of participation among designated groups is 55% for youth, 55% for women, and 2% for persons with disabilities. They will also conduct quality assurance work and develop data assessment reports on the quality of data in the sphere of the public bodies reporting on the EPWP system. And then target number 4 is the number of contracted non-profit organizations to implement the non-state sector program and supported by the EPWP. They plan to contract 350 non-profit organizations and to support them to implement the Extended Public Works program. And Chairperson, here we are also busy aligning our targets with what is still very much under discussion is some of the Phase 4 targets for Extended Public Works program. Target number 5 is the number of public bodies provided with technical support, and this is very important, Chair, as we explained earlier, that the public bodies are under-reporting work opportunities, and they are also reporting work opportunities where there's no evidence of a work opportunity being created. So there's a bit of a challenge there, and one of the interventions that our EPWP program undertakes is to support these public bodies with proper systems and processes to ensure that what they report is credible. Then moving on from there, number of frameworks on sector convergence approved. They've done this for a number of years, Chairperson, is to bring about standards and protocols to ensure that the public works program is implemented in a standardized way throughout the country, be it a local authority or non-state sector or national department, that we have a common approach. They introduce these guidelines and frameworks. Last year, they introduced recruitment guidelines to ensure that recruitment is credible and there's no favoritism and proper standards are followed. This time, they're coming up with a policy. In the absence of legislation, this policy here is intended to bring some kind of enforcement of EPWP protocol. So this is where they're working, and we are also aligning all of our numbers here to Phase 4 targets. When I look at the budget for the Extended Public Works Program on slide number 52 is 2.7 billion rand, or just under, and the bulk of it is for infrastructure and operations. And if I move forward, Chairperson, to break that down in terms of economic classification, it is evident that the bulk of the budget is provinces and municipalities and non-profit institutions of just over 2 billion rand, 2.2 billion taken together. And what is indicated that EPWP, the bulk of the expenditure is the incentive grants, which they provide to the non-state, the non-profit institutions, as well as provinces and municipalities. So the grants and the grant system is very critical for EPWP managing this particular program and takes up the bulk of their budget. Moving on to Program 4, which is the policy branch or the policy function, is our interventions to influence as well as transform the construction and property sectors. We engage in a number of initiatives, and this is how we do it. We have also the Construction Industry Development Board, one of our public entities we work closely with, as well as the Council for the Built Environment, which oversees the various professions, the architects and the valuers and the engineers. We work closely with them to achieve this transformation. But these are our performance indicators in this regard. The first performance indicator talks to developing a public works bill, to refresh our mandate, to rethink what public works is and means, how it can best play a role in the country. As you're aware, the infrastructure responsibility and title have been added to the name public works and infrastructure. What does that entail? This infrastructure, how does the department go about implementing such a mandate, and what are the goals and intentions of that mandate? So this process here, this public works bill, if possible, will take all of that into account to refresh our mandate, to give us a fresh impetus to implement public works. We don't have legislation called the Public Works Act, but we have legislation managing health, managing education, and the other areas which are also concurrent. So it's a space we need to fill. Moving on from there, both the CIDB, which is the Construction Industry Development Board, and the CIDB essentially responsible for the regulation and the development of the construction industry. And then the CBE, in target number 3, which is responsible for overseeing the professions. Both of those pieces of legislation are being revisited to determine whether or not they are relevant, they are in line with current thinking, and to bring about change going forward. So there's a lot of legislative interventions in targets number 1 and 3. And target number 4 is doing the same thing. These are the built environment professional councils, 6 of them which I'll relate later, the engineers and the architects and the like. So we're looking at the whole quantum of our legislative framework to determine what changes are required to give us a platform to move forward into the 6th administration and beyond. So that is our policy intervention, Chairperson. I move on to slide number 58. And slide number 58 is talking to the budget for the policy branch. They have a huge budget, Chairperson. For 2019-20, it's nearly 4.5 billion rand. But when one looks at it very carefully, they don't have that much of a budget. The large portion is taken up by transfers to various entities. All of our entities and their transfers are located under the policy branch, because it's our policy to create those public entities. We don't create a public entity for no reason. We have a Construction Industry Development Board, for example, to transform, to help transform and regulate the construction industry. So that is why this is our mode of delivery. Their mode of delivery for the department is to use a public entity to deliver a particular service. And in that regard, the budget for the various entities such here, and we have the CIDB is receiving 76 million from the department, the CBE is receiving 53 million, the IDT 5 million, and in past years the IDC received a lot more. And then the property management trading entity, which is very much still part of the department, is not a separate autonomous entity in legal terms, 4.2 billion. That is the bulk of the budget of our policy function, so they're mainly in transfers. Moving beyond that, Chairperson, I move on to Program 5, which is the final program of the Department of Public Works. This is the prestige program, and how this program is now formulated is that it only deals with prestige policy in terms of setting norms and standards for prestige, where the delivery takes place in our property arm. So if you have prestige clients requiring maintenance support or plumbing support, whatever the case may be, it's the PMT, our property arm, that delivers on that requirement. Mm-hmm. So this particular program is dealing with norms and standards and policy making around prestige, what prestige clients can expect as a service, and what the norms and parameters and limits are for that service, what they are entitled to. This is explained in this program. Then they also support events, public events, such as the State of the Nation Address, for example, or the opening of Parliament. And they also provide movable assets to our prestige clients. And their performance indicators, of which there are 4, include the following: that in the year ahead, they are targeting the development of 2 prestige policies. And the Chairperson, I can't understate the importance of this. The policies, like I say, they determine the norms and standards, the quality of the service, and even the limits of the service that can and cannot be provided. So it's very important for members of Parliament and the executive and the legislature to know what they are entitled to and what they are not entitled to. That creates the proper framework to give an efficient service. Then target number 2 is state events. There are 8 state events planned in the year ahead to support. And item number 3 is the percentage of movable assets request service within 60 days, and we plan to keep our promise in 85% of cases. and then sign off infrastructure work list. This is very important. This is a planning instrument. It means that Prestige understands its client needs. And we are saying that we should have a clear work list for the services and goods that are going to deliver to their Prestige clients in the year ahead as a planning instrument. So that basically takes us through the performance indicators for Prestige. We have a budget of 115 million for 2019-20, and slide number 64 indicates the economic classification for that particular program, and they have a 63 million or more than 50% of their budget is taken up in goods and services in terms of movable assets and the other support for state events. Chairperson, I move into the concluding section of the APP for the department, and that's part C, and that's a link to long-term plans. And there are a number of areas here which we cover in terms of linkages to other plans. The first plan that we link to in our annual performance plan is a service delivery improvement plan. Chairperson and members of the committee will be aware that the service delivery improvement plan has its genesis in the public service regulation and applies to national and provincial departments. And what this does is it creates a context for frontline service delivery. They are supposed to talk to issues that impact upon the service beneficiary. So they deal with very common sense issues in terms of how you perceive a service and the introduction of the minister, of how people feel the department in terms of the service they receive. And in EPWP, people feel EPWP through recruitment. They feel favored or they feel discriminated against. So EPWP has got the recruitment guidelines, and they are running awareness campaigns to roll out these recruitment guidelines. So we ensure that EPWP initiatives have credibility and recruitment processes are credible. So that's what EPWP is doing under the service delivery improvement. Then we have Prestige. Prestige is engaging in active client relationship management and also enhancing accommodation. And some of their critical interventions is to ensure that in the year ahead, they must improve the client target ratio, that they should have an improved ratio of Prestige staff dealing with clients. In the past, they had one person perhaps dealing with 30 or 40 different Prestige clients. They want to lower that number so they provide a better service. They're also introducing a Prestige client index in terms of how members of parliament, the legislature and judiciary perceive their service in terms of particular principles. And they're also conducting condition assessments on the Prestige portfolio. So they understand what's broken and what needs to be fixed. So that's something they're doing in a year ahead. And then I move on to the policy branch. I never thought they'd participate in this program, but I thought it important to look at our property management empowerment policy and to assess how our beneficiaries in terms of our designated groups, in terms of the PPPFA, how disadvantaged groups are perceiving our empowerment policies, whether it's working for them and whether it's being spread across all groups, to ensure they believe they are participating in it. So this is research conducted by the policy branch, and in terms of our SCM, they are also participating to ensure they change our procedures to achieve greater value for money, better service delivery, and more transparency in our processes. So this is where we're focusing in terms of frontline service delivery. Moving forward on page 67, Chairperson and members of the committee, we have our strategic risks. The department has 10 risks. 10 strategic risks, 5 relate to DPW, 5 to PMTE, and 2 relate to both DPW and PMTE, which I will identify. Our 5 strategic risks are as follows. The first risk is a sustainability risk, is the erosion of the department's mandate. The second risk is a compliance risk, is the breach of laws and regulations. The third one is the non-alignment of service delivery across the public works sector. The fourth one is an untransformed built environment, and the fifth one is the credibility question around EPWP, is that the reporting system and the audit findings create credibility questions on the extended public works program. So those are the 5 key risks, Chairperson, that keep us awake at night, and we have a number of initiatives in place to deal with them. And these are explained in the annual performance plan, and they're also dependent on a number of initiatives being rolled out in the year ahead. So the department can deal with these going forward. Chairperson, members of the committee, I move on to conditional grants. By way of explanation, the EPWP integrated grant for provinces, this slide merely explains the kind of grants that flow through the department to others. And we have mainly the extended public works program to incentivize public bodies to run effective and efficient EPWP programs that create jobs. So we have the EPWP Integrated Grant for Provinces, which is incentivizing provinces to increase labor-intensive employment through programs that maximize job creation and skills development. Then an EPWP Integrated Grant to Municipalities has the same objective, but for municipalities. Then we have the Social Sector EPWP Incentive Grant for Provinces. This is a provincial social sector department to increase job creation, where they must focus on strengthening and expanding social service programs that have employment potential. So this is focusing on the provincial social sector department. Then we also have the EPWP incentive for the non-state sector wage subsidy. This will increase job creation through the expansion of the non-state sector EPWP programs. So those are the four grants, chairperson and members of the committee, that we that flow through the Department of Public Works, Extended Public Works program. And then finally, Chair, these are the public entities of the department that are linked to the department, and there are four public entities: the Construction Industry Development Board, which I mentioned earlier, is responsible by legislation for the transformation, regulation, and development of the construction industry. We also have the Council for the Built Environment. The Council for the Built Environment is an umbrella body that oversees the green block on the right. So the Council for the Built Environment is essentially overseeing and developing common standards and regulations for the built environment professional councils. Then we have the Independent Development Trust. They are created by a trust deed. And the Independent Development Trust has an interesting history. But for now, suffice to say that they deliver social infrastructure. And they operate more or less as a business. They used to operate on a $2 billion grant that was made available to them several years back. That grant has run out, and they are now being challenged to become a sustainable business to survive and to go forward. Then we have AFRIMA South Africa, which is very similar in many ways to the South African Bureau of Standards. However, AFRIMA operates in a different space. They operate and they standardize and they approve, like the SABS approves for use. However, they approve for use non-conventional building materials and systems. Is those the SABS would not be familiar with in the building industry, AFRIMA certifies those. So that's the picture with respect to our public entities and chairperson on that ground basis. I'm come to the end of this presentation. Thank you.
Thank you for the presentation. I would then invite the members if there are any questions, comments, clarities. Honorable Siwisa, followed by Honorable Wayne, Honorable Shabalala, and Honorable Hickson. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, I forgot the name for the presentation, but I'm going through this, and there are some instances where you speak about skills development and how to curb the increase or to get down the unemployment rate by internships and learnerships and everything. And then you go to page 9 where you speak about your SMEs, your small businesses. And I don't know what role is public works playing in this, because there are certain schools in the Northern Cape that participate in small business competitions, grade 10, 11, 12. And after that, the learners just finished. So I don't know what role the public works can play on that. And another concern I have is about the EPWP, that we've been having people who are working in the EPWP for so many years. Why can't they be absorbed and be permanent and get their living salary? And another one would be based on your leases, places that public work has that are being leased out. Is there a proper procedure that's been followed to make sure that each and every prestige client pays what's due on their rentals and all those things, and making sure that they pay for their services? Because I'm not even sure how many buildings are out there, excluding the hospitals and the clinics and the police stations. There are other buildings that belong to Public Works that are being rented out. Because I see your budget, I don't see anywhere where it says revenue. It only speaks about spending, 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 but there is no income that I see. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you again also for the presentation, detailed presentation that we received. I have about three or four questions. First one is related to what my colleague had already raised on the expanded public works program and the expectations created by workers who have been on the public works program for an extended period of time. What that does, if one just assumes that, for example, in your municipalities, that they are expected to be assumed by the municipality as now full-time employees, it actually raises the wage base, salary base, and some municipalities, our municipalities, are already struggling. So how do we manage that particular expectation of workers to get full-term employment, which is one that obviously we cannot downplay? The second is with regards to the 2017-2018 Auditor General finding. I think of the six entities, 2017-18, only one of the entities obtained a clean audit, and that was CDE, in terms of the 2017-2018 audit. The irregular expenditure was still sitting at some 210 million rand, although it was an improvement on the previous year, but you're still looking at irregular expenditure, which is quite high. Addressing irregular expenditure for it to become zero-based seems to be a bit of a huge task. And are you winning that particular battle at getting zero irregular expenditure in the 2018-2019 audit? IDT continues to be a major concern. It seems like the Auditor General has picked that up as well. That IDT, in terms of just auditing IDT, huge concern. And IDT seems to be cropping up all over the place. I think you kind of skimmed over that. We have measures in place, I think is what you said, in terms of addressing IDT. Can you unpack what those particular measures are? The 2.72, that's the average score for management. 2.7, I think it moved up to 2018 or so to 3.6. That is the... What is that measurement? Is it a measurement out of 5? Is it a measure out of 10? So can you just maybe unpack that for me? And then you look at decreasing the fraud, not just irregular expenditure, but also looking at dealing with aspects of fraud. But on that particular scale, have there been any individuals who have been found guilty and prosecuted? And if yes, how many? And then the last one is, what is the progress on the asset register, and what is the asset register for Public Works Department and infrastructure looking like? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I was a bit calm during the contribution by the minister and the deputy, especially noting that this is a close-up on the 5th Parliament. And I hope that with the new administration, would be expecting the programs and also the strategic plans that will talk to 7 priorities, because when you look at what has been happening in the previous term does not necessarily follow specifically on the seven priorities. I also wish to understand the material findings that have been picked up in all the entities. Maybe it will be detailed today or maybe some other time. Also, maybe some other time will give us the indication of the turnaround strategy, because we have listed here the list of risk for the Department of Public Works, strategic risk. And I'm sure that with your new strategy, it will be aligned to a the turnaround strategy that will seek to overturn this, because you cannot, in the previous administration and in this administration, tell us about this the risk as if they are a delivery of some kind and all of us must clap hands. It just can't be. The other issue about the recruitment, I am not sure whether it's an issue for today, maybe it's an issue for the next time, that you take us through the process of the proposal that comes into effect the EPW program, so that I'm wondering where I'm seated. How come you are now at this time, at this era of our democracy, you now you're still talking about the recruitment as an issue? Because for me, I would have thought that from the beginning, when someone is, or a department is supposed to run, or a municipality is supposed to run the EPWP, the recruitment strategy will come or will form part of that plan from the beginning, so that by now it doesn't become an issue. But I maybe moving forward, we might be able to engage on the issue of EPWP. And what makes a person to grow within being in the EPWP? Participating in the EPWP, what are we looking forward in terms of, if this person has been there, let me make the an example of the Department of Transport, because I'm used to it. Then I'm looking at this old mama that has been there for 3 years, or maybe for 2 years. Has this person developed in any sense? Yes, maybe it's another discussion that you may look forward to your future as president. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much for the presentation, sir. My question is on slide 41, where you speak about the built environment professions. And you speak about three provinces with state capacity building programs in the built environment that have been signed already, and 40 school programs. My question is, where are they? Which provinces? Can we have a list of which schools? For the very simple reason that it's one thing to say you have programs running. It's our job to do oversight to find out whether those programs actually are up and running and how successful they are. Similarly, you talk about a public works academy to be launched. The similar question applies. Where will it be launched, and how will one get access to that? I've been largely covered on the other issues. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. It's like this committee, we are going to work together. We think alike. But at this point, let me take this opportunity to say to both the Minister and the Deputy Minister, we congratulate you on your position, and as a committee, even in my party, we are really looking forward to work with you, because we clearly believe that our goal is the same, is to serve South African people, because we believe that if you fail, we all fail. So it's our responsibility to hold hands and make sure that we make the best out of this economic environment that is not favorable for all of us. Chair, mine is regarding the EPWP program, but let me start with the last one. According to the presentation, they've really identified the strategic risks for the department. That is five of them. But I think in terms of the action plan, it doesn't have the muscles, because it just says what needs to be done, but we don't have even the time frame. When is it going to be done? How will it be done? And the budget implication. Because anything to be implemented, we have to have the know-how and how much will it cost. Because if we don't have that, it's just like something that you just read in the book without anything. If maybe we can be given that. My other question, Chair, is with regard, I was happy every time when the presentation was done. The objective is always to talk about fraud and corruption, how you are going to fight it and everything. But having been given many information since this morning, it is clear that there are so many issues that have been investigated that are still with the SIU from so many years. So if maybe you can give us some sort of an update, what is the status quo now with certain cases, because that is being highlighted here since this morning. Lastly, Chair, is with regard to the vacancies within the department. It is clear that the department is really struggling with a large vacancy rate in the past, even until now. And one of the key challenges was to fill the critical staff personnel, especially with that include the environment professionals that we all know. And there's also, the department has a high turnover rate for skilled staff who work on contract. If maybe there's also no succession plan, and if maybe you can even tell us, how are you going to mitigate, or how do you plan to resolve this issue? Like my colleague already said before, you only identify three provinces that are going to assist, but nothing is happening. As I said last one, but now this is the real last one. EPWP, that is the main concern. The department is still the lead department responsible for the implementation of EPWP. And as you indicated here, according to the budget, major part of the budget goes to the municipalities and to provinces. But my worry is you still don't have, you still don't have power to see how provinces or municipality, they are implementing this EPWP. So it's worrying me. Such a lot of money is going to be allocated there, but you still don't have powers to, you know, to instruct or head the team. So what is it that you are going to do better this time? Because we are all aware that EPWP, the intention is good, but many provinces, many municipalities, they are not really doing exactly the justice of the program that we want to achieve. Thank you.
What for you? I think Minister will do
one. Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to make a procedural point that tomorrow afternoon we are presenting all the entities. There's one question that came from Honourable Member of the ACDP about the entities IDT. We've got a special session with you tomorrow to deal with that. And then, as you know, we've got two votes, the DPW vote and then the PMTE, the Property Management Trading Entity. I'm also learning all of the acronyms. And some of the questions just overlap.
So I was wondering if we should not do both votes so that the honourable members have the full picture and then we can answer the questions together. But there are some specific questions that have come now out of this presentation that we can answer, and then the overlap we can do later on.
Members, respectively from the minister, maybe to allow them to present the PMTE. we are learning this acronym. To allow them to present the PMTE side or the budget side of it. I don't know, because some of the questions, if to me, Minister, your team can respond to the questions related to the PWU, and then indicate that this one is going to be covered in YAR. Because sometimes when you don't respond now, and you present, another will come up with other questions and you find out, but a very critical point was raised, but then it became lost because the other presentation died. So I would appeal to the team that to respond and then just indicate that this question is relating to that, and then we will then deal with it. Just like the one you have indicated that we'll be dealing with IDT tomorrow, that's good and fine. We will then deal with them. Then, thank you, Minister.
Thanks very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. We are going to respond to these questions. The way we are going to respond to them, we'll respond to them also in relation to the DPW vote, the main vote, but they will also be responded to in the PMTE. But I think colleagues have been taking these notes to ensure that we respond to all the questions that have been raised. The majority of the questions, other than the EPWP and the issue of fraud, entail the property management trading, but I will suggest, because they've been raised, we can respond. Yeah, and then in the presentation, they can come again also, like the issue of the lease environment. The issue of the SMM is it affects both DPW and the department. The IDT has been responded to, so that we should respond to it in the area of in the presentation by the IDT. With respect to the questions on the vacancies, I think they affect both the department and the PMTE. I will respond to some, but colleagues will actually add. The issue of the vacancies and the appointment strategy, whether we do have a strategy. The issue is that we are in a built environment professions, which naturally is a scarce skill environment. The competition is too high. We compete both with the private sector and government. We have developed a strategy, as you may see, in the area of the young graduates, young professionals, wherein we have got a program to complement the employees of the department, which means it's a parallel process. It's a skills development program wherein we take on board young professionals who are in the built environment professions. We bring them on contracts in the department linked to programs for them to qualify as professionals in their various built environment professions. These young graduates, we may be seen to be having a lot of vacancies in the area where we can recruit young the professionals in this built environment. But naturally, if we look into the young graduates that we're bringing on board, they complement the area where we've got vacancies, because their appointment is linked to the vacancies that we have, and then we ensure that we deploy them in various programs, in various work programs. It is correct that it's not an area which is easy to recruit. We are doing our best because of various factors, like, for instance, the salary band of government is limited. We can't go beyond that. Is one of the reasons. In the area of the other area which I think I should cover, let me give colleagues the opportunity to respond if there is any addition I can add. You can.
Thank you, DC. Chairperson, members of the committee, I'll just deal with the three issues here regarding the planning and the seven priorities, the risk management and the fraud and corruption. With respect to the seven priorities, we've already commenced with our planning for next year and the 5 years ahead. We started with that process. In fact, as I also presented, I mentioned the fact that this plan is also a transition and a recalibration for the next administration and a new 5-year plan. We are currently unpacking the medium-term strategic framework. We've also, to a certain extent, unpacked the seven priorities, and they'll form the core of our plan for the next 5 years. Strategic plan 2020-25 will be underpinned by the seven priorities. Then moving on to the point about the risk management, I appreciate what the member is saying, is that we've identified these risks as though they were a fact of life, and we'll move on with them and live with them. But what we've done essentially is risks are a fact of life in its own way. When you walk outside, you can get knocked over by a car. Anything is possible. And what we've done is we've identified those key risks that would impede our performance. So we see problems before they occur. So one should see it in that context. And the strategic risks are those major risks. And I just want to remind colleagues what they are about. In terms of how they affect the department. They affect the sustainability and the continuity of the organization and our continued existence as an organization. So they're not those small operational risks. They are these huge issues that prevent us from achieving our goals and objectives. And what they do is they provide us with an opportunity to identify the mitigating plans we need to put in place to ensure that we neutralize those risks, we prevent them from occurring. So it's a proactive strategy, really. It's somehow, I would also relate it to insurance, with vehicle insurance. What you're doing is you're transferring the risk to the insurance company in exchange for a monthly premium. So you're foreseeing the possibility of an accident and you're transferring the risk. We foresee the possibility of the occurrence of a number of future events that may bring negativity upon us, and we're dealing with them proactively. This is what this is about. Then, Chairperson and members of the committee, moving on to fraud and corruption, I'm sorry, I'm going to have a bit of a long answer for this. And I'll also start by talking about risk, because I think two or three members asked the question. We've identified the top 10 risks that cause fraud and corruption in the department, or the areas where we find the vulnerability to fraud and corruption. The first one is the abuse of unscheduled and emergency maintenance, that we find ourselves maintaining geysers and equipment that don't even exist. But there's collusion between our own staff and service providers. And we find the collusion between our officials and contractors. There's also inflation of prices and scope of work. There's conflict of interest, irregular award of tenders, construction project mismanagement. There's an increasing tendency to find duplicate payments. There's also cover coating where companies, but you'll find five responses to a tender and it's all the same individuals bidding through five different companies. You find fronting and credential misrepresentation, where there are companies and organizations who bid and they pretend that they are part of the designated groups that we seek to empower, but they are in fact not. Then we are also finding an illegal tendency for increasing illegal occupation of state property, also through the participation and collusion of our own staff. We found incidents, just by way of example, where our staff also rent out state property because they know it's vacant and it's not being taken care of. But this is by all the risks. I move on to the SIU as well as the Department of Public Works. And the Chairperson, members asked the question of what investigations have taken place. I want to say that over the last few years, we've conducted several investigations in the department, and the SIU have also been implementing a number of proclamations. In fact, the SIU is implementing its fifth proclamation. This fifth proclamation has got to do with emergency maintenance. The suspicious transactions have been identified where we are incurring several billion rands a year in emergency maintenance, and the emergency maintenance is not being incurred in a productive manner, and much of it is down to fraud and corruption and mismanagement, and the SIU is focusing on that. And what have the SIU done in the last 4 years? They've conducted 2,325 separate investigations, of which they've concluded 1,892. And what we've seen is in terms of disciplinary action, 8 members of staff have either resigned or retired or died before sanctions were sanctioned out. We've had 3 final warnings, 12 verbal warnings, 19 written warnings, and 15 suspensions without pay. And we've also had 8 cases where the evidence was not sufficient to charge. We've also seen 8 dismissals. We found one person not guilty in the process. That totaled 79 disciplinary hearings resulting from SIU investigations. Chairperson, we've also had civil action as a result of SIU work, and 1.3 billion rand is being recovered by the department, or the department is seeking to recover it as a result of SIU investigations. And what I would say is that some of them are very straightforward. They relate to overpayments for leases, where payments were made for space that was not given to us, or rates were charged per square meter in excess of what was agreed in our lease agreements. And we are recovering there around 300 million rand. And that's a much easier process because we just deduct it from the landlord's monthly rental. But there are others which are more complicated. For example, we are referring quite a significant amount to the asset forfeiture unit, and that's 467 million in total. And there are also a number of matters pending before court, and that's 377 million pending before court. You would have noted that 2 weeks ago that the SIU and the department appeared in the Pietermaritzburg High Court to recover 155 million from the professionals who conducted the Inkandla project at the residence of the former president, seeking to recover 155 million rand. So we are in court for that matter. These will take longer. But what I want to say, Chairperson, very interesting, is that the SIU has now have a new proclamation from the president that the SIU will have its own silver court with its own judges. So they bring their matters before their own court, so they don't have to wait for the High Court and a long waiting period for matters to appear before the Roll. So that is what has happened with respect to civil recovery. It's 1.3 billion rand, and we've had 80 disciplinary hearings. But also of interest, Chairperson, is that we've had 72 referrals to the law enforcement agencies. There's 17 matters the NPA declined to prosecute. 29 matters we're still waiting for the NPA to make a decision. And then 5 matters have been registered with the SEPs, we're still waiting. And there are only 4 matters before court. And Chairperson, you can see that this is not a very good report regarding criminal prosecution. And we've had meetings with the NPA and the police in the last month, in fact during the month of June, and the SIU. And we've also presented our case to the JCPS cluster of GGs, and the head of the NPA as well as the Hawks are assisting us to either fast track some of these matters or to even reconsider whether the SIU declined to prosecute or at least the NPA declined to prosecute. They are revisiting these matters. So we have a good story to tell on the SIU work on disciplinary action and civil recovery. Our concern is that the matters before court and the matters waiting for NPA decision are taking unduly long. So that's the department, the SIU chairperson. When I come to the Department of Public Works, we also have an anti-corruption unit. The anti-corruption unit works very closely with the SIU. And Chairperson, we've prosecuted a number of different cases in the department. In fact, I don't have all the figures in front of me, and what I have is confusing me today. But what we have is that we've conducted more than 300 investigations internally. And we've, in fact, charged more than 100 members of staff. We've actually exceeded the SIU numbers also. with disciplinary action, and we also have a number of sanctions from suspensions without pay to dismissals as well. So our disciplinary action record has been very good with our anti-corruption investigation. We have more than 400 investigations in the last 4 years. And with respect to the criminal referrals, we've referred 39 cases to the SEPs, and we also have a problem that the SEPs and the NP are not making the decisions. So what you see as a whole, chairperson, that we have a good record with respect to disciplinary action as well as civil recovery, especially with the work of the SIU, but our problem is criminal prosecution. And in that particular arena, we're working closely with the NPA and with the Hawks, especially recently, to intervene and to turn that around. And we'll keep you posted. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I think Minister wants to add something.
I instead of honourable members trying to write down all of this, if you go to our website and the 1920, the first draft of the APP, it's around about page 28 of that document, where it provides the data and information regarding investigations. And it goes right from 2012-2013 right to where it says that we are also pursuing 1.3 billion rand for recovery. So it's all contained there, just to help members.
Thank you. I think Minister almost covered my own question because that he's reading from somewhere talking about all these things, and in the presentation it's just one point, so what does that detail? But it's good that you are referring us to another source. There are two members that join us, Honorable Mumalo from IFP and from KZN, Honorable Matebula from ANC and from Pumalang. Honorable Mumalo's hand is up.
Well, thanks, Chair. I had apologized that I would be joining the committee a bit later due to other commitments. I'm sorry. Formally, let me greet you. Colleagues, I have a few questions here with regards to the presentation. I asked them earlier. However, it was not a correct platform, so it seems like this one is more correct than the other. One would be with the CPE, with regard to CPE. The question was that all these professional bodies that fall under CPE, like your quality surveying as a profession, your construction managers, your EXA and whatnot, mm-hmm. How do we then ensure that these bodies become friendly to disadvantaged young people who want to get into their professional statuses, because you find that these bodies were designed not in our age, but it does not speak now to the integration and to the transformation agenda at all. So do we have any authority, and if not, what if we do, how do we then ensure that these bodies become a reflection of the new South Africa and actually carries the mandate of the transformation agenda? Number two will be the issue on immovable assets. Chairperson, I want to believe, maybe the colleagues will correct me, that Department of Public Works has a number of immovable assets that are not being utilized. They are not being utilized at all. They're deteriorating. They've got people staying there illegally, and etc. So how do we, once as a client department has surrendered that particular property, to ensure that if there's no one else who comes to say that we are going to use this facility, how do we then make a quick way to ensure that we dispose those particular facilities? Because at the end of the day, we incur cost whilst maintaining a facility for a very long time. The security, there's cleaning and whatnot and all those things. So how do we then fast track the disposal of that facilities, because it takes longer than required. Number three will be in terms of infrastructure, the private sector. I think, Chairperson, we must find a way to call the private sector and make them feel that we need them as people of South Africa, and as they should play part in the development of young people in South Africa. And if the private sector does not want to play ball, because government does not have the capacity to employ everyone and actually capacitate anyone. So I believe that we must strengthen our policies in terms of saying that the private sector must play a role in creating opportunities for young people, particularly graduates, and ensuring that the transformation of those entities or those businesses, if I may call them that, do actually reflect the diversity of young people, particularly the black ones. Lastly, Chairperson, will be the issue on expanded public works program. If Chairperson, we were to speak of public works program, these are programs that are designed for poverty alleviation in the interim whilst the person tries to find something sustainable. Now, once we just take those people and throw them into expanded public works programs and do not provide any form of training in order to make sure that those people will be able to develop themselves after that. Because if a project is going to run for a period of a year, thereafter the project moves away, because there are certain principles that speak to and to saying who qualifies to be in that particular program in terms of demarcation of wards and councillors and whatnot. But once the project has been completed, those people, we are taking them back to the poverty that we are trying to alleviate. But how much investment have we actually made to ensure that we equip these people with skills so that they can be able to sustain themselves even after the project has been completed? Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair, and my apologies for coming late. As I indicated, that I'm not feeling well, but I had to dash quickly to see the doctor. Chair, I just want to ask some few or make some few comments in relation to the report presented. Chair, number one, as I indicated in our first session, that you heard little or nothing about people who are living with disability. That actually they are actually getting assistance in terms of jobs, number one, employment. I'm talking about the employment, and also in terms of assisting them in providing them with the business, because I kind of meet quite a number of people who are living with a disability, and they do indicate when you meet with them that we are seen as if we are being sidelined and we are not part of this country, because when and if we are tendering for some jobs, we are not actually considered, even though that we meet all the necessary requirements. And that is the same thing with the people who are living in rural areas. We want to kind of see some differences in those people. But in what way do we want to see that? If we can be assisted in terms of provinces, the number of people that have been assisted, who are young, who are living with disability, and women. It should not be a question of saying that, you know, we have assisted, say, 100 people nationally. So I think we need to break down and let us have that documented. I think it will help us. Well, the other thing, well, I hear that there are people who have committed some kind of crime within the department, and some of them, before they were charged, they resigned. Now, I just want to find out, because this thing has been something that has been happening. People, they commit crimes within the public sector. Now, speaking in general, in terms of government. And once they realize that they will lose cases, they simply jump ship. Now, I just want to check if this department, what is it that we are doing? I know that there might be some kind of legislations that we kind of need to comply with. But I'm sure that somehow we are empowered to do something to stop this thing from happening. Because we cannot allow a situation where people come and commit crimes and that once they realize that they are about to be caught, and some of them, they live with serious money, millions of rands, and they are not even pursued. Well, another matter, I hear that you are saying that the prosecution has declined to prosecute some of the cases. Well, it's simple. The prosecution will not prosecute a case wherein there's lack of evidence. And I wouldn't maybe be glad that I'm hearing that you are also prosecuting, I mean, you are conducting disciplinary hearings and more than the SIU. What we want to hear more is that you have this particular situation where there was corruption, and then we have fought the corruption, and then the levels of corruption have dropped. Now, if I may just hear from the department, or if we may hear from the department, to what extent has corruption dropped as compared to other years? Lastly, Che, well, I just want to know, any civil cases that have been brought against the department, and what were those civil cases for? Thank you very much.
Honorable Mashele and Honorable Pusu with your last one.
Thanks, Chair. A quick one. One, appreciate the presentation presented by DG. One is a follow-up in relation to skills. The DG is saying part of it they can't attract because the department is competing with the private sector. The department hires the contractors, and these contractors are able to attract. You give people tenders, and after giving these tenders, they are able to attract the necessary skills. In the presentation here on program 2, there's a slide where you have indicated the number of people that you have given either internships, learnerships, and all that. I want to believe that as much as you are starting from a particular year, it might date back from many years. Probably that you are trying to produce the necessary skill. Probably you must tell us, where are these people that participated in those internships and all that? If you are not training them to absorb them, it will be something else. I give an example that you give people contracts and they are able to attract the necessary skills and you fail. Probably you should be able to tell us. Me being myself being from the villages, I can give you an example, Chair, and the minister and the deputy minister. When you are in Mpumalanga, There is a town called Nelspruit. There are two hospitals which are just less than 2 kilometers apart from each other. The other one is private, the other one is public. When you go to the public hospital, you have got a backlog of orthopedic cases. You are told the public hospital can attract specialists because of the rural nature of Mpumalanga. But this other one next door, which is less than 2 kilometers, has the necessary skills. So I translate this to this one here, that I know that even in a deep rural area, when private sector wants to do something, it brings the skill. And here, in your case in point, you appoint them. When you want them to build a bridge or you want them to build a road, they go and build. But yourself as the employer, you can't. I think DG, probably you must be, the reason might be the Bermuda that you gave us. Can you give us the more of the reason such that we can try and find a solution into that one? You were asked about the irregular expenditure. Probably, what is the biggest contributor from the department which contributes to this irregular expenditure? Let me submarine that, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I was also going to touch on the issue of tenders. DG, I think we are at the point of we need to have our own state-owned companies. And from my experience with tenders is that the reason why there is such a high number of people that are busy corrupting in the Department of Public Works is because of they want what we call in ghetto language jojo. So at the end of the day, they don't follow the procedures that they need to follow to make sure that the right person gets the right tender with the right documents. So because of they want a piece of the pie, they are going to dip their fingers at the end of the day, the whole hand, into the cookie jar. So I think we are at the point that we need to have our own state-owned companies. Coming to public buildings, I don't know if it's in the budget, but our public buildings are deteriorating. The standard is not so good. You get to hospitals, they are cracking. You get to clinics, the toilets are not working. You get to some schools, you get to even some magistrate courts where you find that the buildings are deteriorating. So I don't know in your budget if there's anything to do with it to maintain our public buildings. And I'm still waiting for an answer on my three questions.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I will ask colleagues to respond so that we cover all the areas, facilities management in the area of maintenance, the CFO in terms of irregular expenditure, and then EPWP colleagues in the area of EPWP who have not responded in that area. Along those lines, at the register, Madam, something to us respond. I think let's respond to all these questions because we should not wait for the presentation. Mr. Maro, let's not wait for the presentation. Let's just respond because the presentation may talk to the responses already. Mr. Maro, you can start.
Just before we respond, Chairperson, through you, I can just make a general statement on the whole issue of corruption and fraud. It is bad, believe me. And we will and we must from time to time come and give the portfolio committee an update on where we are. What is scheduled is a meeting to be taking place with the SIU and the Hawks to get an update on the number of cases that are in the system, how far they are. It will happen in the next few days. I will make further announcements on it in my budget speech on the 10th about the outcome of those meetings. I will also make further announcement on what systems we're going to put in place in the department to prevent and to detect corruption. But DM and myself are new. We're trying to get to grips with a whole lot of these cases, and there are thousands, as soon as we can. But this is where the Portfolio Committee is going to assist us with your oversight role to strengthen our hand to start dealing with some of these cases. I will also be making an announcement about tender procedures. Many of you mentioned the issue of tender procedures. That's where the loopholes are coming in. And one of the proposals that I've made was to say that we are dealing with public money, public buildings, public land, and therefore we are just a custodian. All of these things belongs to the public. And therefore we need to start opening up these tender processes to the public to come and observe to see how we are dealing with their public assets that belongs to them. But if you can just give us a chance until the budget speech, and then thereafter I can give the Portfolio Committee a fuller briefing on the number of cases. The SIU's conducted 2,325 investigations so far. And I know some more has been added to that. So that we can't get into the specifics right now until we've got the full strategy that we can share with the Portfolio Committee. I just wanted to make that point on corruption and fraud.
I think, let me start with the issue of maintenance and the state of public buildings. I'll shorten the answer, but I think it needs a bigger context. It is true that when you look at the state of public infrastructure, both that are in the custodianship of national public works and other three tiers of government, the state is not what you see probably in the private sector. And we've been talking about this in terms of what are the underlying issues. I mean, the many issues that have been raised about skills and so forth. But the biggest issue, which I think in terms of public infrastructure, the bigger issue, is the management of the life cycle of the asset. In fact, post-1994, you would see that the biggest effort has been to extend public infrastructure to underserved areas, more courts, more police stations, more prisons. But in that equation, one of the things that was not properly accounted for and properly budgeted for is, once you have constructed it, what is then the plan to maintain it over its lifetime? And what we are seeing in some cases, very newly constructed facilities, and I can just talk to a few which our IDT colleagues were involved. The courts, the high courts that are built, one in Limpopo and Mpumalanga and in the Cape, beautiful facilities, but few months into their operations, problems crop up because the full life cycle management and costing has not been provided for. And so that's the topic that we're even taking to Cabinet to talk to. When we start investing, it is not only the upfront cost that you look at, it's the full life cycle cost. And it must be visible, it must be costed, and it must be budgeted for. Somebody must actually have the budget to say, for the next 25 years of this asset, not only did I construct it, but I've got the plans to manage to maintain it. And that, I think, when you talk to all public work sector, for government, I think that's the missing link that I think we need to talk to. And I think as we evolve with the committee, we'll bring that topic about life cycle management of our assets and making sure they're fully costed, fully accounted for, and visible through their lives. And I think over and above that, there's another added advantage that we should look at, because in the maintenance, that you create economic activity, you create work. Once you professionalize the cost, that can have a spin-off in terms of infrastructure and what we're looking for in terms of the platform for infrastructure. So that's a general, I think, answer in terms of maintenance and the acknowledgement that, yes, I think indeed where we are is not where we should be, but we have recognized it's a big issue that I think and a big topic that we need to have with the rest of the infrastructure fraternity. So I think maybe my colleagues can cover the rest of the topic.
Thank you, honorable members. I'll respond on irregular expenditure. The question was whether are we winning in preventing irregular expenditure. I'll say yes, we are winning. If the members can recall, which is a public knowledge, in 2013-14 we had irregular expenditure of 34 billion for PMTE, and in the main vote it was 500 million. Where we are today, PMTE is 1.8 billion balance that we are having now. So we are winning. However, there are few transitions that happens to occur, but they are at a very minimal scale now. For DPW as a main vote, for the year under review, which is being audited now, we didn't identify any irregular expenditure because of systems that we've put in place. It doesn't take away that service providers may comply with all legislative requirements. MTS has raised the issue of fraud and corruption. Those are inherent risk when you do procurement. It doesn't mean if we have irregular expenditure, there might be no cases of fraud and corruption. Hence, there is a program that is dealing with fraud and corruption. On the other question that was raised about income, for the main vote, we get appropriation through the parliament where the parliament approve our budget. Maybe we didn't highlight that, but MTS indicated earlier on that we have 7 billion that is appropriated. For PMTE, the source of revenue for PMTE, we get a budget of about 4.3 billion from the main vote as a transfer. The remaining amount is through government departments where we provide services on behalf of departments. I think the total amount is 21 billion in total for the PMTE. Thank you.
Good afternoon, members. Good afternoon, Chairperson. Protocol observed.
In terms of the questions with regard to the permanent opportunities within EPWP, I think the first point that one should recognize is that EPWP plays a critical role in terms of social protection. So in other words, we recognize that there are people that are able and willing to work, but that currently our social grant system does not provide them with any source of opportunity. And when the program was conceptualized in 2003 in terms of the origins of the Growth and Development Summit, it was very clearly stated in the Code of Good Practice that came out after that agreement. And the Code of Good Practice is put out by the Minister of Labour that says that the EPWP must try to ensure that as many people get an opportunity as possible, noting that the opportunities provided are temporary work opportunities, particularly in the constraints in terms of the current environment, economic environment, that is not absorbing people. So EPWP therefore plays an important role in terms of poverty alleviation where there are limited other opportunities. And then if we look at the permanent employment component, so we need to recognize that EPWP has several public bodies that undertake the program. So there's the 257 municipalities, more than 88 provincial departments that we have, and also the national departments. And when the program started, there were two guiding documents, the ministerial determination on EPWP and the Code of Good Practice. And that sets out the work conditions for EPWP workers. So in municipalities where the workers are saying we need a permanent job, the key issue there is that public bodies have the responsibility to undertake, number one, social facilitation. So when workers or participants are recruited on an EPWP project, it is critical that the participants are selected from the local area and that participants are told what to be expecting, start of the project, end of the project, nature of the work. And very, very key in the Code of Good Practice is the statement that explains that EPWP is of a temporary nature and it depends on a few factors. And the Code of Good Practice can be shared with the members for you to be able to see that particular clause that must be included. Very key with municipalities, and I think this is a big struggle with us when we particularly go to NEDLAC, it's this issue of not displacing. And municipalities are continuously asked the question, are you using EPWP for things that you're supposed to be doing as a normal function? So we must be able to recognize that dynamic to the issue too. And they must be undertaking regular municipal functions using regular municipal workers. And therefore EPWP, there are many examples of where EPWP is utilized to be able to, where you introduce maybe labor intensive guidelines to maximize the work opportunities created when you put out, for example, an infrastructure contract. Those are examples of EPWP coming to the fore. So we need to maybe spend a little bit of time to be able to ask the question, what's an EPWP opportunity and what is a normal work opportunity that must be created through the municipality. Then in terms of recruitment, so as stated earlier, in terms of the recruitment guidelines, what we had was we had the Code of Good Practice and the Ministerial Determination. And I remember in the beginning of the EPWP, we went through extensive roadshows with public bodies to explain that the purpose of EPWP with the Department of Labor, particularly using the Department of Labor local provincial offices. Now, what then happened was that we then picked up that the program, the reputation and the credibility of the program is adversely being affected. Why? Because we started to pick up on issues such as patronage in recruitment, inconsistency in recruitment practices, and lack of transparency. And because of our coordination role, it is very critical that we put out guidelines to clarify this. And so our job, we then put out the guidelines. Not that it wasn't clear already, it was very, very clear in terms of how that workers should be recruited in a fair, transparent, and equitable basis. Now, as we proceed, we will continue to put out guidelines. And what we should even do even more is put out even more guidelines in terms of case studies. So, for example, in the Western Cape, some public bodies follow a lottery system. And it's choosing participants in a very transparent manner in front of the community. And then those that do not make it on an EPWP work opportunity are placed on a list that if there are workers that do not fulfill the opportunity or undertake it, continue to undertake it, that those workers would be selected from that. And so our role would be continuously to bring out best practice and also deal with issues where the recruitment guidelines are not dealt with. And how we deal with that is, for example, we would go to a ombudsperson to be able to say, please engage, because we've heard that there are irregular practices that are adversely affecting the program. Key for us is that this program knows no color, knows no political party. And so it's important for the integrity of the program that we continuously remind everyone involved that this is a key social protection component. Now, in terms of the power that we have to be able to enforce, as the coordinator, we undertake various strategies. One of the strategies we undertake is protocol agreements. But before we even get to the protocol agreements, when we get to a target of 5 million work opportunities, we give a national target, a provincial target, and a local target. And every public body knows for the next 5 years what they are supposed to contribute. Now, in that particular, once we've got those targets, we then put out agreements where the Minister of Public Works and Infrastructure signs with the Premier, because it's an intergovernmental relationship. and signs them with the mayors, and the roles of each body is laid out clearly in terms of the leadership required, and also then goes through the administrative functions in terms of what is required from the various spheres of government to ensure that collectively we achieve in terms of the program. Now, in terms of pathways, now it's all good and well to be able to say that we provide temporary work opportunities. But what we must not forget is that there's an opportunity to engage the poor. And so for that short period that an EPWP participant comes in, and last year the average was 93 days of duration, it is therefore critical that we then ask, how do we impart skills that can provide pathways? So we engage with the Department of Higher Education and Training, who then has the mandate in terms of skills, and we then able to, we signed an agreement with them from 2018 to 2023, where they give us 228 million for the training of participants, clearly linked to the National Skills Development Strategy, in which we undertake learnerships, apprenticeships, and skills programs. Skills programs is important because many of the participants have never had a work opportunity and therefore do not know how to undertake certain work functions. So it's very critical that we have partnerships and that we work with the CETAs to be able to create these various pathways. Thank you very much.
Chairperson, for the information of the committee, we are in the process of a review process of EPWP and doing a policy. We've agreed yesterday that I will lead that policy review, and again we will consult with the committee on the policy review. I think after all of these years, since 2003, we also need to make a social impact study, because it's also supposed to help with poverty alleviation and not just always as a temporary job. So we are busy with that process, but also the as you can see, there are many partners involved here, national, provincial, and local, and we need to align the systems that they use to be the same, so that we can avoid the kind of ghost people that are working there, duplications. And we must also begin to reduce the administration of this program. Is costing quite a lot of money. But if you look at who do we pay this administration money to, it's the go-betweens. And that reduces the actual amount that you finally can allocate to the beneficiaries. If you can see in Program 3, you've got the EPWP monitoring and evaluation. We certainly need to strengthen that. Then you've got infrastructure operation. And then an EPWP partnership support. We spend about, and this year, 78 million rand is going to be spent on partnership support. Again, we need to look at, if we spend all of this money to support our partners, the idea must be that they produce non-financial data that we can use in our reporting system. And the reason why I'm leading this process is that there's an audit finding against us because of EPWP. And so we have to correct it in this current financial year. It is in the presentation made by, under Program 3, it says EPWP. You will see there is, it says budget allocation for Program 3, expanded public works program. And you'll see the 2019-20 budget there. What is the amount of money that we are going to spend on this project? It's something like 2.68 billion. So we're busy reviewing this, you know, to see if we can free up more money so that we can help more beneficiaries. And so when we do the policy, which I hope we can conclude in this year, then in the next financial year we can start working on a new policy directive for EPWP. Thank you.
Okay. Let's allow them to finish responding.
I was just trying to say that my question has not been answered. How many places are we leasing out, and what is the revenue? Not the departmental. We know that there are departments that are on lease using public works buildings. Those that don't fall under government, that's my question. How many and what is the revenue?
Can I just understand the question? You want to know, there are some instances where we as a department, we are renting buildings from the private sector. The estimate, or what I've seen, is that what we are spending is something like 5 billion rand. That's the figure I got from the property management trading entity. But they can give you a further breakdown. And then, of course, there are also buildings that we rent out to sister government departments. And you also want to know how much money are we getting in from there. My understanding that I picked up in all the reporting is that the payment's not coming from the sister departments to the public works. And I will be starting a process to start talking to those ministers to pay their debt to public works. But the people from the PMTE can give you the exact details.
Okay. Sorry, did you just remember, colleagues, honorable members, when the team was about to respond, they indicated that some of the questions relate to PMTE. I think Mama Honorable Siwisa, your questions relate to that, and we agreed that they will then respond when the time for them to present PMTE, because they have not yet done so. So can we allow them to come to that presentation? Because that's the one that talks exactly to what you are raising. But you must also allow them to finish up on the questions that we did ask. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. We are continuing responding. The issue of leases is still also is going to be covered in the presentation, but I think because it has been asked, we are going to respond now. I'm going to ask CFO to say something about it, and then Madam Swansea, you should say something. I'll also allow Mr. Faisal here. I'll close up on other issues.
Thanks, Vicky. Just to respond to the question of the recovery on leases, as the Minister has stated, the leases that we signed on behalf of clients' departments, we recovered 4.7 billion. These are unaudited financial statements. However, as the Minister has indicated earlier on, is not all clients' departments that are paying. For properties that we lease to private individuals, we are recovering for the year under review, which is being audited. We recovered 50 million, but it's not all our tenants that are fully paying. We do acknowledge, and we follow up, we send statements and all those things. Then on the issue also of state-owned buildings where we lease to clients' departments, these are the assets that are owned by Public Works. We recovered 6.1 billion from clients, but it's not all clients that are also paying, as the Minister has indicated, the intervention that she will put in place to make sure that all clients' departments are paying. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to address the question on the immovable asset register, or the IRR. We have made considerable progress on the IRR, but there are challenges that we're working, that we continue to work hard in order to address those challenges. I should add that the IRR is central to the business operations of the PMTE and is also critical to addressing service delivery objectives and other socioeconomic initiatives. The current value of the portfolio is somewhere in the region of $126 billion, comprising approximately 81,000 improvements and 30,000 land parcels. I should add that periodically we do share the value of the portfolio with both National Treasury and the South African Reserve Bank on account of the G20 Assets and Liabilities Project, as the intent is to show the portfolio as an indicator of our country as a stable environment for foreign direct investment. So I think I'll leave my comments there. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, sir. Thank you, DG. Chairperson, there were a few questions from the colleagues that was very specific. I know the Minister's pronounced on our anti-corruption strategy, so I'm just dealing with specific questions. There was one around resignations where people resign from the system before they face a disciplinary hearings. And there is a weakness in government. You have the National Treasury database of restricted suppliers, so we have a central database, which also leaves a lot to be desired. That system is also not working, but we still have a system for restricting suppliers and a central database, but we don't have a similar system of employees at the DPSA. It's something we need to work towards. But I'd like to share with the committee two examples that we had. One employee who we found was guilty of misconduct, and we referred the evidence to her new department to charge her. And apparently she resigned from there as well. So we will hound them where we know aware. But we found a more interesting case in the last 2 weeks, that we found an employee guilty within the department. The employee resigned and joined a few weeks back. So our system did not detect that person joining, but we became aware of it, and we're going to follow it up and deal with this person. So we do have our own internal mechanisms, and we have a long memory as well. But the government system has got room for improvement there. Then with regard to the NPA and the declining to prosecute, the member raised the issue of a possibility of a lack of evidence. What I want to say is that that may be possible, but it's not a primary reason. We have an example in our Pretoria regional office where we trapped a member of staff receiving a brown envelope from a supplier. And the police were on hand to arrest the person, and we dismissed the person from our organization. But the police have not brought the corruption case to court yet. So this is a kind of example of our cases. Very strong when we refer it. The evidence is there. And I believe that with the NPA as well, where they declined to prosecute, there might have been interference in the decision to prosecute. In fact, they have given us an undertaking that they will revisit our cases to reevaluate the possibility of bringing it to court. And then finally, Chairperson, there's a question. Is the level of fraud and corruption declining in the department? And what I'd like to say is this is a very difficult question to answer because of the subjective nature of fraud and corruption and the fact that it's a hidden activity. What you have is we start receiving more reports and allegations to investigate. And one cannot say that the levels of fraud and corruption is increasing. It could be that our communication strategy is working better. So it's difficult to say, but we do have an initiative where we seek to measure fraud risk. And in our view, the fraud risk has declined, but not to the extent that we wanted or expected. Over a five-year period, we wanted to drop fraud and corruption risk by 85%, the same five-year period. I would say we'd probably decrease it by 30%. So it's still there. And one of the reasons is because of our environment, the control environment. We need to work on it and work on a prevention strategy and close the loopholes. That really is a long-term sustainable program. So fraud and corruption has decreased, and our program has worked to a certain extent, but there's still a lot of work to do. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, I think there's also some questions relating to CBE. They will be covered also because we're going to have an engagement with CBE. There's also the one on public-private partnerships. This one already, there's a process in our skill development program. We work very closely with private companies. The young graduates that we bring on board, we deploy them in private companies to work there. And then also this question is linked to the question raised to say, what are we doing? Do we bring young professionals on board and thereafter we don't deploy them? The answer that I gave is that they complement the vacancy rate, which means the young professionals that are brought on board, they are also put into the pipeline to actually be considered in the department as and when we advertise positions. There's also a question that was raised to say, what are we doing about people living with disabilities and so on? I think I agree, we have to provide a report which shows the breakdown. We'll actually ensure that we do that, because I think so that we should give a picture of our responsibilities per province or per district. We'll be able to add some of the questions which have not been answered. They will be covered in the presentation by Mr. Maroha of the PMTE, and we can continue engaging on them. Thanks very much, Chair. Honorable Chair.
Honorable Chair, thank you very much. Will the PMT answer my question on the built environment professions in terms of the three provinces and the 40 schools?
Yes, but I can give that answer. The provinces is Limpopo, Mpumalanga and Gauteng. The rationale is that we have a program wherein we appoint mentors to ensure that they align to the skills pipeline of the department. In other areas, we're actually in a process of aligning them to actually go through the skills pipeline of the department, so that we should not appoint young graduates at the end of the day, they fall into the cracks. So there's a process of aligning. But those provinces are Gauteng, Limpopo and Mpumalanga. And we've got a memorandum of understanding with the Cuban government, wherein we deploy the Cuban engineers to assist our young professionals in terms of mentoring them into their built environment professions. But it is also going covering the PMTE. Thanks very much, Honorable Chair.
Let's allow the second presentation then. Let's have 4 minutes.